I think the job of being a teacher is so rewarding in so many ways.
The connection between you and the whole class, that's still unbeatable.
When my pupils are successful, it feels incredible.
I think the greatest thing for me is seeing the pupils that I teach love the subject as much as I do.
I don't think there's any other job where you get the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 612. This is your host, Danny. And I'm by myself today. P and Paris, they couldn't join me on this episode, but they will be on next week. So shout out to Paris and Pete. Hopefully see you guys very, very soon. All right, so this episode of Gamertag Radio, we have a pretty cool, unique interview and very, very exclusive. Nobody else has this podcast-wise. And a couple days ago, I talked about this, that there's two video game developers that are working on the first independent video game made in Cuba. They've been working on this now for a while, and it took me a while to contact them, and we finally recorded an interview with them, with one of the developers, and I can't wait to post this interview on this episode. So we're going to play that later on the show. And the game is called Savior. You can go to SaviorTheGame.com. That's SaviorTheGame.com, and it has a link to their Indiegogo campaign. Right now, it's over 100%. So if you'd like to go over there and donate, go ahead. I think that's the cool thing about the community. When we all get together and we like something, we'll make it happen, you know. So and that's one of the things we talked about, like, you know, his dreams on working on the video games, and what was the first console he played back in the days, all that stuff. We talked about a lot of things, and it's like a good 18-minute interview. So make sure to check it out, and let me know what you think. So we'll be right back, and once we come back, we have fan mail, and I'm going to do this all by myself. We'll be right back after this.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio.
My name is Josue Paglieri, and I'm the creator and director of a small independent game studio, Empty Heads Games, in Havana, Cuba. We're working on Cuba's first independent game production, a game called Savior.
So I know you guys have been working on this for a while, but let's go back when you started to play video games. What was your first video game that you started playing in Cuba?
The first video game I played in Cuba was a console my cousins had. I think it was called the Intellivision. It was pretty antique, and I remember the game was Tron Deadly Discs. It was a game with two characters. It had very primitive graphics, and if you had to throw these discs between the two characters.
And how is the gaming community in Cuba? Because, you know, I know when I used to live in Dominican Republic, there was a lot of gamers that they play, you know, games like Final Fantasy and others. They don't know anything about it to read in English, but they managed to finish the game. And I was like amazed about that. So how is the gaming community over there in Cuba?
The game community in Cuba really is, it's gone through a lot of phases. In the past, it was a lot more difficult when games were mostly just on consoles. It was much more difficult because people didn't really have access to that type of equipment, which made things a little more complicated. So you'd have someone who, let's say, got super lucky, and then that someone would have one or two cassettes to play on that console. And that would be someone who's really, really fortunate. Then you develop relationships with other people who had another few cassettes, and then they would trade their cassettes among each other, and that's how you'd find your way to play lots of different games. The good part was, well, when it came to English, in that era, games didn't have so much text like they do now. Instead, maybe except RPGs, but you could realistically play through a complete game without necessarily knowing English in that era.
Hmm. I know you've been getting a lot of press ever since you announced that you guys are creating the first independent game. So how's it been a reaction for you and your team ever since the media has been talking about this?
Well,
I don't think I mentioned it before, but I'm making this game with a team member. It's not just me, it's also Johan Armenteros, who's the programmer on my team. And we're both in this together. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it with me to the United States to promote our campaign, but we figured over time that's something we'll find a solution for. For us so far, though, this has been just so unexpected and positive. Really, even in our most optimistic expectations, we never thought we'd reach our goal in just 6 days. So we really believe in this game, and we've given this everything we've got to get to where we are. But to have articles posted everywhere on Killscreen, on Gama Sutra, these are things that, quite frankly, we didn't think they were possible. But these things are happening, and so we're just taking in this moment. In this world, you've got a lot of people working and making really good products, and I imagine that right now we're just living through our 15 minutes of fame.
And what is it that people play right now in Cuba? Do they play a lot of, like, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, Wii U?
You know, we've got all the consoles now, but so many consoles are coming out, and we find ourselves in a really similar situation to the one I mentioned earlier about the 90s, where very few people have these consoles. So some people have them. The majority of those people still use physical discs to play. People who have computers can play more easily, but mostly they're pirated games. Even those playing on console, most of the time have pirated games. So there are a lot of varying tastes as far as what games people play in Cuba. Just like any other place, there are people who like sports games, action games, shooters, RPGs.
Also, what about PC and Mac?
No. Mac isn't a computer that's very used in Cuba.
Okay. So how's it been the experience with you guys? I know you guys started a little bit with the game, and I know you already launched a campaign, and I believe it's over 100% already in Indiegogo.
Yes.
So how's it been? Like, what is the percentage you guys have been working on this? Like, is it 20%, 10% of the development of the game?
I think the game is probably about 20% complete, if I had to give a number. But if you look at our goals and what we want to accomplish by about March of next year, I think we're actually ahead of schedule. Our objective, and I want to make this a reality, just as our campaign says, that is that will be out in the public and ready to play by March. Around that time, I imagine that we'll probably do another campaign to see if we can finance the full vision of the game.
And can you talk about a little bit about the story about the game? What this has to do also with Cuba? There's anything that inspire you to add about Cuba's culture and you add it in the game?
There isn't too much about Cuban culture. I feel like it's more in the spirit of the story we're living right now in Cuba. It's about transformation. It's about change. It's about elections. It's a little about the social and political stuff that's happening in Cuba right now. So a little background, I'm an artist, and the video game medium isn't very much at all like painting or literature. Yet it's always been interesting to me, the process of constructing a video game, creating that meta of a reality. So, this game, there's a character in this game, and the character becomes aware that he's a character in a game, and then all the characters in the game become conscious of this. So from then on, for them, it's kind of this it becomes a personal choice where they're asking themselves, in what way do you choose to understand what's around you? Is it this reality or is it another? So the player will experience a game they play with their hands ultimately. And it's similar to a platformer with elements you'd find in those games. But I wouldn't say that that's the game, that the game's only function is to entertain.
I know you worked on other games in the past and stuff. How those games relate to this, like the style of the game? Is it similar or is it very, very different?
No,
what I've worked on before, those things were more experimental, more in tune with the art I used to do in the past. So let's say it's, but what I did was almost like gaming's ugly cousin, stuff that's not so focused on the experience of the game and being very polished. What I worked on were mostly just concepts and developing them very slowly. What ended up happening is I took a lot of that experience and the spirit of what I did in the past and applied it to Savior. I have this structure that's almost genetic, it's like a platform where you start the game has that platformer structure, but ultimately it takes on a different meaning, a different personality almost. So you could say it's a little more artistic, but not necessarily more artistic. Conceptually, it just becomes a little more profound than a generic platformer. But let's see what people think, obviously. Hopefully that's how it turns out.
I know in the video you said that Cuba is changing now, and this is like the right time to make this move, to create this this video game from you guys. Why right now is the right time for this?
I mean, from my personal point of view, it's that right now we actually have the opportunity. It's the time in Cuba where we have the proper knowledge and the access to the right technology for this type of project. Typically, we'd call this project a little more retro. But in reality, it has a similar level of quality to the types of projects that are being made in other parts of the world. So, for example, if we tried making a game like Call of Duty with the technology available to us in Havana, the results would be very, very much inferior, you get me? But all the elements we have can be competitive and functional. So this is a time where the circumstances have made it a little more easy for us to leave Cuba. It's a little more easy for us to have access to capital. It's a little more easy for us to get access to better technology. And, you know, even though the internet here isn't that great, but at the very least there is an internet that didn't exist for us before. There's just a lot of factors that collectively help us make this a good time for doing this very type of thing. And the fact that I can actually come to the United States and promote for funding, I mean, 5 years ago, that was something that was completely impossible.
Are you planning to release this on Steam, or is it going to be something like, okay, whoever paid for this through Indiegogo?
We're still a bit far from that. We think releasing via Steam would be a great opportunity for us, of course. Though ultimately, I think my dream would be for the game to be published on PlayStation.
And, well, I know you guys have been getting a lot of media attention. What happened if you get an email from Microsoft or PlayStation that maybe they're interested on having this game on their platform también?
That would be a huge, huge celebration. We're really trying to do the things the right way so that ultimately that kind of thing is possible. I'm telling you, making this game, it's not something that was always clear to me. A lot of people think that it's almost the same thing as playing a game, making a game, and that it's just as easy or fun as playing a game, but in reality, that's absolutely not the case. At the same time, after all this hard effort, under difficult circumstances, to have the backing of this community, of the supporters, the press, the campaign backers, who, you know, probably 95% of these people didn't know about me or this project. You know, we have this project here built simply by what was available to us, which was very minimal with whatever was afforded to us in Cuba. You know, we were worried because the campaign had such a small window of opportunity in the world, and the response has just been the opposite. I think I said this in an interview already, but the most bittersweet thing out of this has been that I think maybe we could have done this 10 years ago.
You could have done this 10 years ago? Why you say that?
You know, all the factors I mentioned, the technology, the money, the majority of these factors are things that they're external from the individual. So sure, in 10 years, I may have grown as a person and as an artist, but perhaps the game I made 10 years ago would not be, let's say, as solid as I think this current one is. But I could have done something, you get me? That process of just doing something and making mistakes and learning and doing something else, that's always a good process to go through.
Yeah, you learn from that. You learn from that. Now, for those that haven't put money yet through your campaign and Indiegogo, why should they support you and your partner? If they really want to get this game, let's say they're curious and they don't know much about the game, why should they donate?
Our game is made with all the love that we have in the world. And I think it's evident in the results and the final product that you'll see. There's emotion in there. We built this game as organically as we could. We spent months and months installing this story that we feel is unique and is going to be surprising the player, you know, at every turn. And the success of this game could be the catalyst for the future development of Cuba's game development community. I think if our game is if it were a complete failure, it'll be such a huge blow to people who think like us, who have a desire to build a video game in Cuba.
Now, my last question: how's people the people reacting with her in Cuba about this news, about you guys working on this game and getting a lot of support from the gaming community in the States and around the world?
Well, right now I'm in the United States. I'm actually in New York, so it's hard for me to give you a legitimate answer. I know that there have been articles about us and then some more articles about games funded by the Cuban government that are supposed to be more educational. So I think we should get a very good response. We're Cubans. We're representing our country with our product. In the end, this game is still something that's very personal, and ultimately, I think this question will be answered by the player, not just Cubans. It's universal. It's not something to be constrained to just one nation or location.
All right. So for more information about the game, where people should go to find out more about the game?
You can follow our campaign on Indiegogo. There's also our website, saviorthegame.com. There's also our email, which you can write to us at contact@saviorthegame.com. All those avenues are open for us. We're also on Twitter and YouTube, so just stay in touch with us. We'll accept any type of help, not just monetary, of course. It can be motivational or inspirational or constructive criticism, any communication we received. Trust me, it's well received. We've never experimented with any of this until now, so I just feel very excited and happy that the world is helping us finish Savior.
Well, I just want to say congrats, man, and it's very inspiring, and I hope to see this game succeed once it comes out in the future, man. So congratulations, man.
No, man, thanks a lot to you and for this opportunity. If I tell you, if you knew of everything else that are interested in made an article about us, in contact us, or wherever, please call me or send me an email or a message. That with all the pleasure of the world, I will respond back.
Awesome, man. Hey, I want to say very quick that I donated $50. So,
oh man, that's super cool. Thanks a lot for that, man. Believe me every single penny gone, man. Every single penny gone for us.
All right, man.
Oh, man, thanks a lot to you. Goodbye, dude.
Thanks to Jonathan Davila for helping us out with the translation. Also, Brian at CBS Radio for helping us out editing this this interview. So shout out to you guys. Thanks a lot for all the help.
Welcome to to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here. Remember, head over to gamertagradio.com or visit us at play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes. And yes, you could also listen to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories. So make sure to spread the word and let people know about GTR.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, it's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, so we have a couple emails here. So I'm going to start the first one. This is from Trevor. He's like, "Hey, guys, I need some quick advice on one of my next purchases. My girlfriend and I have a pretty extensive video game console collection, and I just recently introduced her to Call of Duty. I apparently did my gaming on Xbox One. However, I just recently switched over to playing my PlayStation 4 a bit more due to having more friends on there. With this recent switch, I pre-ordered Infinite Warfare for the PlayStation 4, and with her newfound love for Call of Duty, she would like to do the same. My question is, should I buy a PlayStation 4 Pro so she can use my original console so we can game together?" He said that they have two TVs. "Or should I go with a cheaper for the cheaper version, Let's Advance Slim? I do not currently own a 4K television. However, I plan to within the next year. I need help deciding whether to get the newest and the best PlayStation or settle on the Slim for now and wait until the PlayStation 5, which could be a few years away. I've been bouncing back and forth and could really use some help in making my final decision. I love the show and thanks in advance for any feedback." All right, Trevor. So first of all, thank you so much for sending an email. Here's the thing. If you're planning to buy a 4K TV in a year or so, then I would rather just buy a PlayStation 4 Pro and let your girlfriend to play the original console and you go from there. So once you purchase the 4K TV, you're already set. You have your Pro that's already 4K and you don't have to once again buy another console if you do buy, let's say, the Slim version, you know. So right there, you're wasting more money. In my opinion, I think we should go with the PlayStation 4 Pro. And at the same time, in the future, if you do plan to play, like, let's say, PlayStation VR and so on, the PlayStation VR is even better on the PlayStation 4 Pro. And there's going to be games that's going to look a lot better on that version than the original version or the Slim version, you know. So if I was you, I'll just buy the PlayStation 4 Pro and just get out of the way and wait 2 years once the 4K is a little bit more cheaper. You buy it and you're all set. You don't need to buy another console. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm trying to say? So, yeah, I think that I know Paris and P-Power will say the same thing. I don't know. We'll see next week if they disagree with me or not, but I would do that. Go with the Pro. All right, so we have an email here from, this is like a voicemail. Actually, two voicemails. So I'm going to play one. This is from the UK, all the way from the UK. So I'm going to play it right now. This is from Dave.
"Hi there, guys. It's Dave here in the UK. Just wanted to talk about the D game that you guys love to talk about all the time. I'm not talking about Destiny. I'm talking about The Division. So basically, I just wanted to let you guys know and let any of the listeners know that weren't aware. Basically, Massive have put out a big update this week called 1.4. It dropped on Tuesday, the 25th of October, and it's basically a massive change to the whole game. They have introduced a load of different mechanics to fix a lot of the problems that people have had with The Division for the past few months. So in summary, just to go through, they've implemented now a world tier system, so you can use that to select the level of difficulty in terms of enemies that you'll come across right across the world, which is useful for when you first hit endgame and you want to rank up in line with the gear that you have. They've also reworked the rewards, so as you do go through that path of gearing up, you get the right rewards that will give you the right kind of gear to go up to the next level. So they have that whole kind of progression thing in place now, which is really good. They've adjusted the time to kill for enemies and also the time to be killed by enemies, so you no longer get one-shotted by an enemy that takes like 3 or 4 magazines to kill. So that's been really positive as well. At the same time, they've actually tweaked the AI as well, so it's still really, really quite difficult because you get flanked, they try and get behind you, they try and push you out of cover, all these different things. It's really quite impressive what they've done on the AI side of things. They've also done a balancing pass on weapons, skills, gear sets, and basically what that means is you have much more variety in builds, so you can actually go for different, you know, do some experimentation on your characters in terms of what kind of build you have, rather than what you had in previously in 1.4. You had a kind of a very certain type of specific build that you needed to run with to be effective and not get destroyed. One of the biggest changes they've also made as well is you no longer have to go into the dark zone for the best loot. They've opened up the open world, they've brought back the open world bosses, so you can actually go around there and farm that content and farm all the other content for the best loot. You don't really need to go into the dark zone anymore if you don't want to. So the dark zone is still something that I think they're going to look at in terms of balancing. It was something that was outside of the scope of this update. But it's a big difference because you can actually solo a lot of the content now, and you don't need to go in the dark zone to get the best gear. You can still progress as a solo player if that's how you like to play. On top of that, there's loads of different like quality of life fixes that they've made. Things just to generally improve the enjoyment of the game and just make it much more fun. So I've been playing it, I've been having a blast with it. So just if anyone's interested in the Division or they've stopped playing, now is a good time to go back. There's plenty of content, there's main missions, there's daily assignments, there's weekly assignments, there's high value targets to do, there's the open world bosses, there's the 3 incursions, and there's also the underground as well. So there's quite a lot of content in there, certainly for new players. So yeah, I just wanted to let you know it's a good update, and I'm really enjoying it. So Paris, it might be a good time to jump in if you've not done it yet. Nice one. Cheers, guys. Speak to you later.
All right. So he said that this is a major, major update from the Division, just came out. So for those out there, thank you, man. You know what? Because of your voice, I'm probably going to go and download and check it out, man, because I haven't had a chance to play the Division in a very, very long time. I've been so, so busy playing, you know, Gears of War 4 and now Titanfall 2. And I'm getting ready because Call of Duty is coming out. And the thing that I really, really love the most about Call of Duty, because this is what happened during my trip to LA, is the whole zombie game. I had a blast with that. And hope we could play online. You know, some of the listeners that are planning to purchase Call of Duty this weekend, let me know. We'll play some zombies. You know, I prefer to play that than anything else from the whole Call of Duty collection that's coming out. So, yeah. But I'm definitely going to be checking that out to see all the changes and the update. Because the thing is, I stopped the Division a while back because of the due to the bugs. And then I heard rumors that some people, like, their characters got erased when the new update came out. I just got scared. I was like, no, I don't want my character to get erased. I know they fixed it eventually, but I was just like, I didn't want an update. I got just tired of the whole bugs thing and everything. So I'm definitely going to be checking it out. So Dave, thanks a lot for sending that voicemail. So we have another voicemail all the way from Australia.
Thank you, Manhag Radio. So thank you for putting me at the end of the podcast for 6:10. Just saying thank you. Happy 43rd birthday, Paris. And if you could pick one game to play for the rest of your life, what would it be? Anyway, yeah, bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast and also sending a voicemail. Let's see. One game that I will play for the rest of my life. Oh, my God. That's a lot of games like that, man. There's a lot like that old school that I'll pick. Like, let's say I'll go way back with Super Metroid that came out for the Super Nintendo a long, long time ago, back in the 90s. Also, another game that I truly, truly love that I play still to this day, that I have it on my on my 3DS, is Streets of Rage 1 and 2. Truly, truly love that game. more because of the soundtrack. The soundtrack is just amazing, and it sounded so advanced at that time. So yeah, I still to this day I play that game a lot. Also, I wish the servers were up, because I definitely would be playing that a lot more too. Phantasy Star Online, that I know I mentioned this many times in the past, that that game completely changed my life, and that's the reason why I started podcasting. But it's just the community overall, super amazing, and I got to meet a lot of cool people back then when it came out back in 2001. And one of my favorite sites at the time, I used to visit daily just to get updates and read what people were saying in the forums. It's called PSO World. Go to PSO-World.com. It's still around. They still have a big community there, and that was one of my favorite sites to visit back in the days too. Now, current games. Wow, that's a tough one, man. Current games. I do love the Forza Horizon series, especially Forza Horizon 3. I've been playing that game a lot, nonstop. Even with Gears of War out, you know, Timefall, I'm still playing that game. And I think I have like over 100 hours already. So, yeah, I think I will stick with Forza Horizon 3. That game is one of my favorite games so far this year. It might change from now till December, but it's up there. It's up there for me for 2016. Contender of Game of the Year for sure. And one more game I definitely have to mention that was pretty amazing, and I think is better than Final Fantasy VII, is Final Fantasy III, that came out for the Super Nintendo. By far, one of the hardest Final Fantasy games that I ever played was that game. Holy crap, that game was tough. Super, super tough. So yeah, those are the games that I would choose. I know there's a lot of games, but I'm just mentioning different ones. I would like to change it up and everything. But yeah, those are the games I would choose. Yeah, but I want to know, like, what are your thoughts about the interview that I just recorded with the developers of Savior, the game? Let me know what you think. I think it was a lot of fun, man, because we were going back and forth. Like, let me tell you what happened. I got their contact information, and I've been trying to hit them up, and it was very difficult for me to contact them. I was calling a lot with the original number that is from Cuba, and then he emailed me back eventually, and he said that he's here in the States. He said in an interview too, he's here in the States promoting the campaign, the crowdfunding campaign. Right now he's in New York City, and he's planning to visit Miami in the next couple of days. So I'm going to try my best to see if I can meet up with him and everything, you know, have some drinks and just talk about video games in Cuba, man. I had a great conversation, man, with him about that, you know. That's one of the things, too. Like, when I used to live in the Dominican Republic, I mentioned this during the interview, I used to play a lot of video games over there, especially like Star Fox, Final Fantasy, and so on. And I noticed that there was other people playing the same games that I was playing, too. But a lot of those games you had to read in English, but they managed to finish the game without the internet, without no strategy guide, nothing. They just did it by themselves. Even if they couldn't understand what they were seeing on the screen, or in English, you know, that was just amazing. Super crazy. And at that time too, I opened up a business, in the Dominican Republic. I, kind of created like a little arcade spot, or, you know, a location where people will go and play Super Nintendo games and Sega Genesis games. And they will pay me, let's say, they will pay me $5 for 30 minutes, $10 for like an hour, and so on. And then also some people, not everybody, but some people also will rent games from me too, because I had a lot of Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis games. And it was actually pretty cool, man. There was a very strong video game community. Still to this day, the community has grown even more, but back then it was pretty, pretty big in the Dominican Republic when I lived there, at the city called San Francisco de Macorís. It's like in the north part of the Dominican Republic. And it was cool. I was the first person that actually created a store like that in DR. And then a lot of people from the country was traveling 3 to 4 hours just to come to where I was living, like in the area of my town. And they got to see my location, all the games that I had and everything. And they took the idea and basically did their own, like the different cities and stuff like that. So I had so much competition. I was like, yo, this is too much, man. Like, I can't keep up. There's too many people doing the same exact thing. So I just got bored of it and I just completely stopped. But a lot of those people just still kept on with the business and everything. And now, you know, with the whole LAN parties and everything, it's like a lot easier. And also online gaming, they do that a lot. But yeah, at that time, it was very unique and different. So I can imagine how it is in Cuba. You know, a lot of the family members that live over here in the States, they'll send them all the consoles and their or computers, everything over there. And people get to play, man. You know, that's one thing, man. I got to see that video. I was like, man, you know, it's cool that the gaming community is getting together and helping them out. You know, I think that it's super, super important for us to do that, man. Because, you know, lately I've been seeing a lot of drama online. Like, I mean, we see that every day, you know, like on YouTube and Twitter and stuff. You know, like fanboy stuff, conversation and so on. And it's like, I feel like, why are we spending so much time talking about that and not talking about the good things that we've been doing or the things that we could do overall with the whole gaming community? You know, like I'll mention this on Twitter, like, yo, instead of wasting so much time and energy on the negative stuff that's been going on, why not promote, you know, things like Extra Life, you know, something that I think is like a very, very cool charity that we could get involved with that. And I believe they're going to start doing that on November 5th. So for more information, go to Extra Life. But see, like little things like that, or look, like, you know, the Savior, when I got to see this on Indiegogo, I got really, really inspired and I donated money on that because I feel like it's good for us to help each other, man. You know, I think that by us doing that, by us helping each other out, our community is going to grow. It's going to help our industry even grow even more and stuff. But when I see all these like little fanboy stuff online, I think that it's embarrassing. It hurt us as a community, as a whole. And it just doesn't look good, man. It looks very, very childish. There was a time when I was young, yes. Oh, I'll be like supporting one company and the other not. Like, but once you get involved with the industry and you see a lot of things behind the scenes and you get to see everybody. Look, when I go to events, you get to see people that from the outside, they look like they're batting it out, competition and everything. But once they're inside at a club or a venue or at an event, everybody's cool with each other, man. That's why I find all this thing like a waste of time. Everybody are just doing their thing. That's fine that they're competing everything. But overall, we're doing this together, man. So don't waste your time on crap. Let's promote the positive things, man. You know, that's one thing about us, man, with GTR. We're having so much fun with this thing that's the reason why Paris is still podcasting. That's the reason why I'm still doing this. And it's been a very, very long time that I started doing this, you know? And Pete, the same exact thing. We're having so much fun. And then the interaction we're having with, like, I love engaging with our listeners. I love that so much. So thank you for everybody that's been sending us voicemail and messages and emails. Because that's how you know that we are changing people's lives. When a lot of listeners are hitting us up and telling us their story or where they're listening to the podcast or and so on. There's hundreds and hundreds of emails that we get that sometimes we just don't read them on the show, but we read them like offline and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's super important to us, man. You know, and I try my best to engage with people online too. Same thing with the guys. And I think it's super, super important, man. Let's promote the good stuff. Let's inspire other people. That's going to help us all, man. And that's it. We're going to wrap it up. All right. So yeah, I'm doing this all by myself today, but I'm definitely going to be joining with the guys next week, Monday. And hopefully we'll review some games. And this month has been crazy. Super, super crazy. But if you would like to play some online gaming with me or with the guys, make sure to find us online. Go to the Xbox One, like Xbox Live. Go to clubs. If you have the dashboard preview update, look up Gamertag Radio, our club. Join in and we'll play online. Or you could do the same thing. If you have PlayStation 4, go to the PSN network, PSN. go there and search for Gamertag Radio in the community sections, and we're there too. And also you will meet other listeners that also would like to play with people that's part of our community. And if you have time, Fall, we're there too. Gamertag Radio. We're everywhere. Forza 3, Forza Horizon 3, and so on. So just search for Gamertag Radio, find us, and we'll play. Head over to gamertagradio.com, play.it/gamertag, and you can listen to our past episodes there. You can find us on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories. You can find us there. And spread the word. That will help us big time. All right? Now, before I wrap it up, February 24th, my friends are going to have a big event in Orlando. It's called PodFest. It's about multimedia. If you're into YouTube, if you're into like podcasting and so on, they're going to have an event where there's going to be a lot of different speakers basically talking about all that stuff, you know, and you will learn a lot at this event. I'm going to be also there speaking. I'm going to give you more details about that later on. But the reason why I'm mentioning about this is because that weekend, February 25th, is our 12th anniversary of Gamertag Radio. What I'm planning to do is I would like to get together with everybody on the 24th because they're also planning to have an exclusive screening of the documentary that we're in. It's about my life and about other podcasters, like why we're doing this. And I had cameras following me for months. They also followed us during E3 and so on. It's a pretty cool documentary, and they're going to screen it first in Orlando, Florida on February 24th at 7 p.m. So if you're interested, if you would like to go, if you live in Orlando area, you're close to Orlando, or you're planning to drive over there, let us know. Let's celebrate together, because that's that movie. It's super important to me, and it's going to be big. It's going to be really, really big. But if you're close by, I would love for us, all of us, go together as a community and just check out the movie together. So I haven't seen it. I know certain things about it, but I just want us to be surprised. I want to be surprised with you guys. So, yeah, let me know if you plan to go over there, and we'll go over there together, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I believe Pete so far is going with me. Still don't know about Paris, but, join us and you'll meet us over there. All right. So for more information, go to podfest.us, that podfest.us, and I'll give you more details. I probably will get free tickets just for the screening. I'll keep you posted on that, all right? So hit me up at fanmail@gamertagradio.com, and I'll see what I can do, all right? Until next time, I'm out. See you next time. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.